I get it. I totally get it that life happens, but it's just when life happens to a point where we're unable to fuel our bodies, we need to take a step back.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people kind of like us. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/DE Legacy. See you there. So today I sat down with Heather Allen. Heather is a nutritionist, an entrepreneur, an all-round community builder. She's a bit of a badass. She's a queen on Instagram, and she's someone you absolutely have to know. Heather has a love affair with food, and she has this innate capacity to take these complicated concepts and turn them into something simple that you can understand and cook up on your own in the kitchen. We talked about fermented food, building community, and the concept of hangry, and the blood sugar balance that we all need to do to be able to optimize ourselves on our daily mission. This is a practical talk about how to put things into action, how to take your body and your physiology to the next level with the decisions that you make day in and day out each time you have the choice to eat a new meal. This was a great conversation. You're going to love it. Heather Allen. The one and only Heather Allen. Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Hey, Megan. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Well, this is quite long overdue, but I'm really excited to have you here. You are a badass entrepreneur, a holistic nutritionist, an Instagram comedian. Tell us how you got to this point, how you became who you are.
First off, I appreciate the tire pump on the Instagram comedian. That's lovely. I've never been called that before, but I take pride in my Instagram account. How did I get to this point? You know, my entrepreneurial journey started in a totally different realm than nutrition. I actually had the intention of opening up a retail space selling refurbished and upcycled goods. So in order to make this, of course, right? And here I am as a nutritionist. So to make this happen, I had moved to the big city of Toronto from small town Saskatchewan and pursued an education in small business and entrepreneurship. And once I had my business plan and my projections in place and I was ready to rock, I realized that I was missing something. And I was basically completely lost at the end of school. You know, I was supposed to be taking steps forward and I ended up taking a bunch of steps back and really kind of sitting with myself and just taking a moment to look back on what really mattered to me. And it came down to the problem that I was solving for people. So was providing people with more stuff really solving a problem? Well, it may have been helpful that it was like upcycled and refurbished. It would have been good for the environment. But was it really going to change the lives of the people who owned these things? Most likely not. So I kind of sat with that for a little while. And I really looked back on some of my experiences and the things that really mattered to me. And the things that made me happy. And some of the things that kept coming up were my experiences traveling. So I had spent like a good 4 years traveling on and off to various countries throughout the world. And along my journeys, I had adopted cultural diets that accompanied kind of every new stamp on my passport. So when I was in Southeast Asia, I was eating tons of fresh seafood, rice, and vegetables. There weren't any like pastries or breads or treats or cheese or anything like that in sight. And I felt great. I had lost weight. I was happy. My skin cleared up. And I was really just loving life. But I didn't credit it back to what I was eating, of course. We never really do. Look.
Yeah.
No, we never associate those things. So I had this miraculous shift in how I was feeling, but I just assumed that it was because I was on somewhat of a vacation. I was on this adventure. So after about 4 months of traveling throughout Southeast Asia and kind of eating this way, I hopped on a plane and I went to continue my adventure in Australia. This immediately reunited me with bread and cheese and kind of ridiculous sized portions. And I can actually remember my very first meal. We were in a camper van and we were driving down the East Coast. And my very first meal that we made was a box of Kraft dinner and a loaf of like crusty white bread. And I just went to town and just loved it. And it wasn't shortly after that that I realized that I had packed on pounds again. My skin went nuts. I had really bad acne and it was very, very like cystic acne. My digestion sucked. I was feeling down in the dumps. Like I really had this dark cloud hanging over me and I was still on vacation, but I wasn't really enjoying myself as much as I was when I was in Southeast Asia. Still didn't kind of really hit me until I got back home and returned to totally a northern style of eating and the SAD diet, the standard American diet. So this is where my aha moment came from, where I realized that food was no longer about simply fueling my taste buds without considering the digestive issues or the mood swings or anything like that. It was literally like a light bulb going off for me, showing me the incredible power of food. So after getting a taste of a more vibrant life and feeling really great, it's really tough to go back to feeling mediocre. It's really tough to transition from the state of being super happy and awesome and being really comfortable in your own skin to just kind of okay. And I know that you talk about this a lot of just feeling like a good, and it's not a good measure of life just to feel mediocre. So that's kind of how my mission towards fueling my body began. So I started reading articles on the interweb and started Googling everything and getting all my hands on all these different nutrition books. And I ended up not really getting a clear message on what I was supposed to be doing. There's a lot of really bad information out there and there's an excess of information and it's really tough to navigate. So that's why I ended up enrolling in, school at the Institute of Holistic Nutrition so that I could get a fundamental understanding of how the body functions so that I could determine whether or not the information that I was reading was legit or if it didn't or if I could question it or maybe it wasn't quite right for me. So yeah, that's kind of how I got to this point in my life now. And I've been seeing clients one-on-one and helping them with their goals and facilitating workshops and all that jazz. And that was kind of my story. Transition from like upcycled furniture to nutrition. That was my journey.
Well, then the upcycle theme continues, right? So why I have this question every day when I talk to people, but I'm just going to ask you, why did it take so long to make the connection between what you were eating? Do you think it was like you legitimately didn't know or you didn't want to know? Like, where do you think your truth lies in that?
I think it comes down to the fact that you don't want to know that you have to change your habits because habits are hard to change. It comes down to not wanting to change the enjoyment of eating whatever the heck you want and really maybe a disassociation of how our bodies actually function and how they work. So sometimes in nutrition, we kind of talk about the barrel effect too, when you're kind of picture yourself as like a barrel. And if you're eating like a bag of chips from time to time, no big deal. Your body can metabolize those excess sugars and fats and carbohydrates and stuff. But if you're constantly putting stuff in the barrel, the body doesn't really keep up as much as you would like to think that your body can just, oh, it can detox, whatever. So you kind of get this, your barrel's filling up slowly. And then eventually it just overflows and you get all of these symptoms and then you don't really associate the couple of years that it's taken you of eating these poor dietary choices as the overflow effect. So it seems like a very acute thing, but really it's been building up for quite some time. So yeah, it comes down to a disassociation with how our bodies actually function and not wanting to change.
Right. And we've also been trained by a system that like something goes wrong. Well, you just take something to fix it as opposed to something you're doing every day might be contributing to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I always kind of wonder why we weren't handed the manual on how we've been given this vessel when we're born. We have this amazing machine and no manual on how to use it or how it functions. So we go through all of our education without really understanding the car that we're driving.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. And you mentioned in there, you know, your skin was a mess and you were feeling moody and all these things. Let's talk about the mood piece with respect to food, because I think especially when you're trying to execute and you're trying to perform in life, when suddenly you're feeling more anxious than you want to, or you're shorter than you feel like you should be, or you lack the capacity to focus. I don't think food is the first place that we tend to think in terms of being a cause for all of this. One thing in particular, one concept in particular, is this notion of being hangry, which is basically everything I just said, all encapsulated into one term. I know we've used this term together before. What does it mean to be hangry?
Yeah, so hangry, I guess in order to understand what it means to be hangry or what hanger is, you kind of have to have an understanding of how blood sugar works. So I'll give you a quick little rundown on this. So we eat food, we enjoy it, it's delicious, and it's super amazing. From there, our digestive system breaks that food down into these simple molecules that our body can kind of readily use for energy or tissue repair. So for example, carbohydrates are broken down into glucose, proteins into amino acids, and fats into fatty acids. So when carbohydrates are broken down, glucose enters the bloodstream. In response to glucose in the bloodstream, our fancy little pancreas releases the hormone insulin, which acts as a key that kind of opens up our cells to allow that glucose to enter so it can be used for energy. So after your muscles and your brain cells have been fed adequately, so they're all filled up, there's nowhere else for this glucose to go. If there's excess in there, any remaining glucose is stored in our fat cells for use later. Then from there, our insulin closes the doors to the cells, it's done its job, and it slowly leaves the body, allowing us to use that stored fuel until our next meal. This is an ideal scenario. So when we get hangry, this is a stage of hunger that when reached makes you really angry and irritable and just plain miserable to be around. And it's typically a result of poor blood sugar management. So whether it be a lack of food, poor meal timing, or simply the consumption of like the wrong foods, and as a result, our cells don't function properly, neurotransmitters that regulate mood are affected, and it just becomes a big wad of a mess.
And so what do we do about it?
Well, we have to balance our blood sugars. We really have to get into the foods that we're eating, like the actual foods that we're eating, the quality of the foods that we're eating. We have to get into really good timing of meals. So a lot of people skip meals and they're constantly grazing or they're just really busy. We have to look at the timing. We have to look at what we're eating, and we have to look at some other things like stress and our lifestyle factors as well, so that our body can actually metabolize nutrients properly, so that we kind of have this, I want to call it like a long highway where it's just kind of like this nice drive, like in Saskatchewan, you just go forever and it's just lovely and great and it's really even, versus being on like this roller coaster of ups and downs and dips and spikes. So we really need to look at what's going on our plate. And when?
Okay, so then take me through this scenario, because I know I have people out there who are like, wait a second, if it's so bad for me to not have food, and if I stink at managing that, what's the deal with all of this fasting everyone's talking about? Like every entrepreneur out there is intermittent fasting, or they're this fasting, or they're juice cleansing, or they're whatever.
Yeah.
Who can do that? Like, are we meant to go without food and we're all just poorly regulating glucose? Like, how do we end up being someone who can handle one versus the other?
Yeah, I think we can definitely thrive on like an intermittent fasting and going time or periods of time between meals. Absolutely. Like I said, when that energy is stored, our body breaks it down and uses it later on. Right. So it's not like we constantly need to be eating food in order to fuel ourselves. Our body is pretty good at converting it if we give it the right types at the right times on a kind of a consistent basis. So fasting is really interesting because what it does is you go periods of times without eating. Usually this is like a 16 or an 18 hour period. So say you had your first meal of the day at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's kind of your lunch breakfast type thing. Transitioned into some dinner. You usually finish eating at about 8 p.m. and then you'd kind of do that cycle all over again. What this does is it stresses our cells, but just to a point where they become more resilient. They start functioning a little bit better. But it doesn't, you can't just go this 18 or 16 hours without eating and then go and eat a cheeseburger and fries and you fueled yourself because you sat in this perfect little window where you only ate for like 6 or 8 hours of the day. So it really comes down to doing it with high quality foods, doing it really appropriately in terms of your macronutrients and kind of understanding which carbs, proteins, and fats are really good quality, and their ratios. And just kind of understanding what works for your body. So some people might not thrive on it and some people will do really, really great. But I can say that most of the people that I've worked with that have kind of adopted the intermittent fasting, or I really like to use the bulletproof diet with a lot of people because it fits into their lifestyle. So definitely finding out what's going to work for your unique needs, because everybody's so different.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that happens for me clinically, and I think it probably happens for you, is people will come in and, you know, they maybe they'll talk about anxiety or the other things going on in their life. And the first thought that comes to mind is, oh, gosh, we've got to manage this person's blood sugar. And at this point, it's almost intangible to me when I feel like it's a blood sugar issue versus adrenals or something else. What signs are you looking for when you sit down with someone where in your mind you're like, oh, man, we've got a blood sugar issue here? With the absence of like overt diabetes, but like, when is it that you're like, ah, what are like some of the little clues that people need to know about?
I think it's definitely one of the obvious ones is going to be energy levels. So if somebody's constantly hitting like a 3 o'clock wall, or they're constantly hungry, or they do suffer from things like anxiety, this can all be correlated back to blood sugar imbalances. So when we're looking specifically at anxiety and stuff, what happens when our blood sugar drops is it diminishes the brain's capacity to produce neurotransmitters that are responsible for transmitting signals and regulating mood. So for example, when we overconsume carbohydrates, we get that quick spike in our glucose, but it also causes a quick and exaggerated release of insulin. So what happens is we get too much glucose removed from the body. And with that comes a drop in certain neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. This causes a huge drop in those and a huge rise in epinephrine. And epinephrine causes the same symptoms as anxiety, such as like heart palpitations, shakiness, rapid thoughts of fear and worry, and just kind of this overwhelming sense of anxiety. So a lot of the times it comes down to symptoms, and specifically mood regulation, fatigue, and then sometimes even hormonal balances kind of come into play. Like there's certain conditions like PCOS that are hugely correlated with blood sugar mismanagement.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, sometimes I'm talking about stress with people and I'll say, listen, there's a lot of stress in your body. And they look at me like I've probably offended them. Because they're like, well, I'm not stressed. Like, I'm managing my life really well. And I have to reorient people to this idea that stress is not just, can you handle your job? Stress is how all the pressures you're putting on your body. And so this massive dumping of insulin in response to this huge spike in glucose following, let's say, your past of lunch is massively stressful to your system. We weren't designed to eat refined carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And so it's super stressful. You're using up a considerable amount of your physiological stress budget with your big pasta lunch. And so usually what I do is they look at me and they're like, you mean I can't eat my pasta lunch? And I'm like, nope, but I'm going to send you to Heather and she's going to make this palatable for you. So, you know, that's the story of so many people, right? They're going to have a big bowl of carbohydrates for lunch or a big sandwich for lunch, and then they're going to crash at 2 o'clock. What's the first thing you're going to do in terms of replacing that lunch for them to help them maintain their energy through the afternoon?
Yeah. And to be honest, there's like so cliche to say that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, but it truly sets a really good foundation for how the rest of your day goes in terms of nutrition and in terms of meals. Because if you don't start yourself off with the right stuff, it just induces those cravings because you're starting off with imbalanced blood sugars straight off the get-go. So kind of a typical poorly managed day in the life of somebody that's not doing everything that they possibly could to make sure that their blood sugars are regulated is, and I see this so much, is that most people will wake up, they skip breakfast, or they grab a piece of toast and a pastry and a coffee, and they run to the office. They get to work, They're super busy. They're all hopped up on their caffeine from their coffee and they're spiking their glucose from their piece of toast or their pastry. They get to the office, they're sitting on their computer, they're really busy. Maybe somebody brought cupcakes to the office because it's someone's birthday. They scarf it down without even really tasting it. And then they go and they eat their lunch at their desk with one hand while they're clicking away on their computer trying to and stressing out about a deadline. And then they hit a 3 p.m. wall and they're like, well, what's going on? And it's when you look back at the way that you started your day, your cupcake and your toast and your coffee caused that spike and that dip in your energy. So at 3 p.m. you're reaching for another coffee. And I see this so often, this midday kind of a Java run. And then typically get home, don't really have dinner prepared. The kids have soccer in an hour and they're hungry and they want snacks before they go and they're driving you bananas. You just grab the quickest thing possible and you just shove it in your mouth in the car and you pass them to them in the back seat. And then you were thinking about going to spin class after this was all done, but you're way too tired for that now. Or you go and you kind of drag your feet and you don't really get the best workout because you're wiped. And then you wake up in the morning, you do it all over again. So that's kind of like the typical thing that I'm seeing with a lot of people. And I get it. I totally get it that life happens. But it's just when life happens to a point where we're unable to fuel our bodies, we need to take a step back. If we can't even fuel ourselves on a daily basis, we need to take a step back and look at what is going on. The opposite scenario of like how delicious and amazing a balanced blood sugar diet, a day in the life of a blood sugar balanced meal would look like, but that'll take me a while. So
I was sitting here as you were describing my day and how busy it was, and I think the reality is so many people are probably sitting there going, how did really? I thought I was the only one who was doing this, and that's the challenge, right? Is you're so busy, and your life is about optimizing everybody else. It's really hard to take care of yourself. So I know you were going to go there anyways, but like, take us through, because it's overwhelming trying to make that change, right? Like, starting with something super small, and then step by step throughout the day. Like, what would an optimized blood sugar day look like in the life of a crazy person who still had all those obligations that you went through in your first scenario?
Yeah, and that's absolutely fair because it's the life of Toronto. So typically, ideally, I like starting the day off with protein and color. And then a little bit of fat in there too is a perfect combo. So usually for breakfast, one of my favorite things, one of my go-tos would be two eggs, whether or not they're hard-boiled batch on a Sunday night so that you can eat them throughout the week. It's a super handy way to incorporate a really good protein at breakfast, especially for busy people. Do a batch cook, get them done. So breakfast would be like two eggs maybe, and then a handful, literally just reaching into the fridge, grabbing a handful of like a mixed greens, a sliced avocado, maybe some cucumber and tomato, just lots of color and the protein and a little bit of fat from the eggs and the tomato, really balanced. It keeps you full throughout the day. So it balances those blood sugars because the protein and the fats help to slow down. They break down a lot slower than, say, just carbohydrates or glucose. So it sustains you a little bit longer. And then depending on what time you had breakfast or if you're really, truly hungry, maybe you need a mid-morning snack. But it's important that we don't associate snacks with treats. And I see this a lot when people are like, oh, I'll just go down to the coffee shop and I'll just grab like a cookie or something. That's not a snack. Like, that's dessert. So I usually like to recommend people incorporate some protein. So whether or not that's some really good quality beef jerky or maybe an apple with some almond butter for those healthy fats and the protein, maybe some berries and some nuts, something super simple. And again, I don't tell people to snack or that you don't have to eat continuously throughout the day. Eat when you're truly hungry. And then lunch is usually pretty easy. I'm a huge fan of leftovers, especially if you're a busy person and you're running around kids' soccer practices, managing a business and whatnot. Lunch is basically always leftovers. I always say, like, love thy leftovers. So lunch is usually whatever I had for dinner the night before. And I usually pack it up when I'm dishing up my dinner so that it's done. It's not another task. I basically just, like, put it into a container, whatnot. And there's actually a lot of really good delivery options in Toronto now. Like, Uber Eats has quite a few great healthy options and stuff, too, if packing your own is just not an option. And it usually includes, again, color and some protein. So usually a nice big salad or whatever's left over if it's roasted vegetables from the night before, and some protein. And then dinner is I find a challenge for a lot of people. And I think that it's important to, A, be realistic about what you can accomplish at dinner time. If you have no time, you better make sure that, A, you're coming up with a plan to make it happen. So whether or not that's batch cooking something on a Sunday night or making something super simple, it's really easy to do like a one sheet meal where you take like a baking pan, you chop up some veggies, you slap on a protein like fish or maybe some grass-fed beef or whatnot. You put it all in the oven and you cook it at the same temperature, at a really high temperature, and you just let it do its thing. You pull it out and dinner's made. So I'm a huge fan of like roasted vegetables with some grass-fed ghee or some grass-fed butter, coconut oil, some good healthy fats, and then some high-quality proteins.
I love it. Protein, color, fat. What do I do if I'm a vegetarian?
There's some really good options. There's tons of options that you can do. So a lot of like grains and stuff too are really good. So quinoa is a really good. Lentils are amazing. Lentils are super, super good. Beans, all that kind of stuff. You can totally get enough protein with a vegetarian or a vegan diet. And if you can sneak in eggs, if you're a vegetarian or and those work for you, I think eggs can be a really good addition to a vegetarian diet as well. But yeah, like quinoa is really high in protein. Hemp hearts are surprisingly really high in protein. Nuts and seeds, pumpkin seeds are probably one of my favorites. So there's definitely a lot of ways. And I always work with my clients where they're at to make solutions that work for them. So not everybody is going to need as much protein as the other person. And not everybody is going to do well with quinoa. And some people just don't eat meat. So this is kind of a little bit of a game for me. Like I get to figure, it's like I'm a detective, like a food detective. I get to figure out what works for people and create solutions around it. So it's always interesting.
Well, and there's so many great resources now, especially online, that you're hard pressed to throw all your excuses at the wall and not find someone somewhere who has worked around them.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
But eggs are I know that we agree on this, that eggs are really such a fundamental choice for people. If it's like the only animal protein you're willing to take on, it's a really nice option.
Yeah, if you look at my Instagram feed, I actually have a hashtag that's just like eggs on stuff, because I just put eggs on absolutely everything. And I've gotten into the habit, and this has been kind of a game changer for me, is again, coming back to leftovers. For breakfast, I will eat super non-traditional breakfast foods. So I feel like it's really strange that typical breakfast foods are super high sugary carbohydrates. So we've done the cereal, the refined grain cereals. We do pancakes. We do French toast. We do all this stuff that is so high in carbohydrates, and it's totally imbalanced. And I feel like we need to kind of get away from that. And a lot of people will have troubles, say, eating like a leftover stir fry with a fried egg on top for breakfast. That is totally my jam. Whatever it is that was left over from the night before becomes breakfast with an egg on it.
I love that. Well, and it's amazing too, right? Is we have this epidemic of ADHD and children having difficulty focusing at school, but we send them off with a bowl of refined carbohydrates and a glass of orange juice, and then can't understand why they're not thriving. Kids have to manage their blood sugar too.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, eggs on stuff. I'm going to absolutely plug Heather's Instagram here. We'll have it in our show notes, but it's beautiful and it's inspiring. And anytime she's live, she's hilarious. So
you're a peach.
follow Bite with Love on Instagram, and you're going to learn a lot. Now, I want to transition a little bit, because I mean, I think we could talk all day about food, but I know part of what your interest is how do we galvanize community around food? And there's been a lot of discussion recently in medical literature, at conferences that I've been at, talking about social isolation and the role that social isolation plays in terms of negative health outcomes. And I was at a study last week, and they were talking about a study where they looked at individuals who are socially isolated and feel like they're not part of a group. Their risk for all-cause mortality, all causes of possibly dying, was higher than in a group of people who were smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So you have a solution to this. You've been running these really cool events where you're bringing people together around the concept of food or food education. Tell us a little bit more about this, because I think it is so brilliant for so many reasons.
Yeah, we've been having a blast with it. So my friend Taylor and I, who's also a nutritionist, we really wanted to create a space where people could come and be part of a community and maybe explore new hobbies and skills that nourish their lives. So we created a company called By Nature, and we host workshops and events. And we really focus on building community because, the social isolation is a huge, huge contributor to our health issues, mental health issues and stuff as well. So we also do a focus on a little bit of more of a traditional skills, which is totally a lost art. So things like fermentation or leather work or just getting around a table with a group of people, making a meal and enjoying it and doing like an educational dinner. So we recently had one where we had brought in some specialists in terms of food security and sourcing sustainably. And we did a 6-course dinner where we talked about where the spices were sourced from and how they were grown. And it just created a conversation around a dinner table, which is something that I feel like is, again, it's this lost tradition of people sitting at the dinner table with their families. So, we really just wanted to create a space for people to come and learn and connect and really grow. So we do a ton of different stuff. We do nutritional farm tours. We do do-it-yourself body care products, natural body care products. And we really just want people to fall in love with food and community again. So, it's been a blast. It's been good times.
That's awesome. And I love the fermentation concept, because I feel like it too is something that has sort of hit a tipping point, and there's so many amazing products out there that are fermented. And what kind of things were you making, and like why is fermentation such a key thing and so important with respect to food?
Oh, I'm so glad that fermented products are really on trend right now, which is great. Because they're so good for you. They're full of lots of different enzymes to help with digestion, but also the key thing is really probiotics. So probiotics are the good gut bacteria that live in our digestive tract, and they regulate everything from our immune system to our digestion. They play so many different roles. And this, again, comes back to that kind of ADHD and anxiety. They help to produce neurotransmitters so that they're sending signals in order to manage mood and our attention and that kind of stuff. So probiotic foods are amazing. And again, it's another lost tradition. Like everyone back in the day kind of made their own fermented food. So we were making the workshops. We do kombucha. We do some sauerkraut. My friend Taylor is actually a pickle product developer. So we're working on some.
That's so awesome.
Best job title ever. So we're actually working on some fermented pickles, because a lot of the conventional pickles are not fermented. They're just soaked in a brine. So why not take things to the next level and ferment them the traditional way that we used to do it? So we've been making a lot of really cool stuff, things like fermented cashew yogurt and coconut yogurts, lots of good stuff. Yeah, it's super fun.
Heather, how would you define health?
I think health is really being free, and it's not free from disease. It's a freedom that comes with being able to do whatever it is that your heart desires, whether or not it's climbing a mountain or hiking or playing with your kids or just feeling good. Like it's just kind of about having the ability to really pursue whatever passion your heart desires.
I love that. That's one of the most beautiful definitions I have heard so far.
Aw.
This episode is brought to you by the Genetics Summit. I don't know about you, but I want to know everything I can about how to take my life and my health to the next level. Looking at genetic information to be able to address your health at a totally different place is cutting edge, and it's precision medicine at its best. Our friend James Maskell from the Evolution of Medicine has pulled together leading experts from around the world together to present information from August 21st to 28th in the free online genetic summit. This is an opportunity to understand what you need to know about getting testing, how to interpret the information, and what changes you realistically need to make in your life on a daily basis to take the way you are living to a whole new place. For more information or to register for the summit, go to meganwalker.com/genetics summit. We'll see you there. So for the second half of the interview, we do something called KPIs, and key performance indicators are those things we would look at in a business that tell us how it's doing and how it's running. And I think we all have those with respect to our health. So these are rapid fire questions. I'm going to throw them your way, and it gives us a chance to get to know you a little bit more.
Amazing. Let's do it.
First question, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
I do. And it's not super rigid. It's just I get really excited to wake up in the morning. I feel like my energy levels are highest there. And the first thing I do is I will grab a glass of like warm lemon water and I will head out to my garden. Actually, I kind of run out to my garden and see what has bloomed, what new fruit or vegetable has grown for me. It's a really exciting process. It just totally revealed how big of a nerd I am. But yeah, just kind of running out to the garden and seeing what's new and exciting and making sure that the squirrels haven't eaten everything.
And can I just point out for people who are like, I can't do that. I live in the city. Where do you live?
I live in the city. I have a container garden in my backyard. It's really low maintenance. And I have tons of stuff growing in it. So yeah, this is literally just in some pots in my backyard. I've got eggplants, tomatoes, I have kale, I have butternut squash, I have parsley, I have oregano. I have so much stuff in a really small space. It's totally doable. And I think it'll have to be another By Nature workshop maybe for next spring.
Love it. Fiction or nonfiction, what are you reading right now?
I'm reading a fiction book. It is called The Color of Our Sky. And it's a story of a young girl who... it takes place in India, and she is escaping her her obligation to become a prostitute and her journey. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. Usually I'm total nonfiction and nutrition nerd. I will read nutrition till the cows come home, but sometimes I need to incorporate a little bit of fun, and that's where the fiction stuff comes in.
Great. What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
I think it's making really good quality choices when it comes to food. And it doesn't mean that I make perfect decisions all the time, but I do get really consistent about making sure that they're quality. So if I want a bag of chips, I will totally have a bag of chips, but I usually go for something that doesn't have all the added MSGs, flavorings, colorings, all these kind of toxic, nasty, funky chemicals. Like I'll go for a bag of chips that, like I'll go for a bag of like flavored popcorn, or I'll do kind of more of a higher quality, like a kettle chip or a potato that's been fried in avocado oil. I try to make really good, high quality decisions. And this is something that's kind of come up is the other day I was craving a milkshake and I was like, I don't want just a McDonald's milkshake of this edible oil weird product. I want something that's made with like really good quality ice cream and some fresh strawberries and just the best quality possible. So I hate to put labels on stuff, but I would say being a qualitarian is probably the most consistent thing. I just try to make the best choices that are available for me at that time.
What do you do for fun or play?
Oh, so much fun. Anything in nature. To be honest, I'm a child of the woods, I would say. So anytime that I can be in nature, I am super happy.
Last question for you, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Oh, I have to say that it's both. That seems like such a cop-out, but I can say that there's certain parts of entrepreneurism that I was not born to be. But that's kind of when I will like outsource them or get somebody else to do. So there's parts of entrepreneurship that I definitely think that that you're born into. But I definitely think that you can develop the skills and the passion necessary. As long as you find the right thing, I think you can go for it and there's nothing stopping you and you're a given entrepreneur at that point.
Great, great answer. Not a cop out at all. This is what it's all about. Like, what is everyone's experience and what do they bring to the table? And honestly, like even the geneticist said it's both. So it's not a cop out.
I'll totally go with that. Then.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Heather, where can people find you, learn more about what you're up to, join you for some of your workshops, check you out on Instagram? Where are you hanging out?
Yeah, I'm definitely hanging out on Instagram. I just love it. I love the visual impacts of food.
I love it so much.
I really do. So yeah, you can find me on Instagram at BiteWithLove. Also hanging out on Facebook from time to time at Heather Allen Nutrition. And my website is heatherallen.ca. And also with the workshops with By Nature, we've got bynatureto.com is where we've listed all of our upcoming events.
Amazing. We'll have all of this information. You can find Heather on Instagram. You can find her at her workshops. And you can find her in her clinical practice, because if you haven't figured this out already, she's very good at taking these concepts and turning them into really practical things that you need to do on a daily basis. Heather, it was such a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thanks for being here.
I'm so stoked to be here. Thanks, Megan.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.